Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Bill Jack from Worldview Academy also here today. And we are in a significant war of ideas. The war of the worldview has heated up in the university unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime. And I'm not talking about secular universities. I'm talking about the Christian colleges around this country. And, Bill, it's been a rout. I think the bad guys have routed the Christian world and life view in the Christian colleges, unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, they seem to be dropping like flies. The Christian universities and colleges seem to be kowtowing to the, as you put it, the cultural zeitgeist.
And you would never have expected it to hit Grove City College.
No, they were instrumental in standing against the tyranny of government, of the statists. Years ago, they filed a suit against having to accept government monies
and regulations
that accompany them, and they held the ground. They were a bastion for liberty and freedom.
They were, and you know, back in the 1990s, you would have said, "Well, there's always Grove City College in Hillsdale."
Yep,
and Patrick Henry didn't exist at that point. But, no, we're looking at a rout right now, friends, and only because of the force of the zeitgeist. Indeed, people need to understand that we have a significant battle going on, but the rout is unlike anything I've seen in the history of the Western Christian faith. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. I don't see anything of a rising Reformation happening in the midst of the rout. And that's what's saddening about this story. Now, of course, I've written the book Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, in which pretty much have concluded that we're looking at the fall of the West right now. And part of my argument in the opening chapters of the book is that the salt has lost its savor. And that's what's happening at the college, at the Christian college. This is supposed to be an unabashed Christian college. As you said, they forewent government funding. They didn't want to submit themselves to Title IX regulations, which I think involved a fair amount of support for feminism and the official doctrinaires of the federal government, its controls of the college and the academic institutions of this country. Well, we're looking at almost a total rout of Christian colleges across this country, friends. AmericanReformer.org presents the story, Wide Awoke at Grove City College, Trouble Brewing Within a Conservative Citadel. This is written by Joshua Abitoy. By the way, he's an attorney, a graduate of Harvard Law School, homeschooled himself, and he was at my wedding 31 years ago. By the way, he was about 2 years old.
I was going to say, wait a minute, okay.
Yeah, he was 2 years old at the time, but he attended my wedding. Son of a friend of mine. So Joshua Abdo has a good article, really is something of a shot across the bow of the Christian college, just saying, hey, guys, what's going on? What's happening with all this? Now, here's how he opens up the article. Sad to say, but American higher education has littered the once venerable Christian colleges and universities that have succumbed to the spirit of the age. Recent examples include Azusa Pacific University, Calvin University, and Wheaton College. I think we've referred to them from time to time. They have fallen in different ways, prey to aspects of critical race theory as well as gender and queer theory, CRT's fellow travelers. If any school were immune to this trend, one would think it would be Grove City College, an institution not only grounded in biblical orthodoxy and the conservative intellectual tradition, but also with a history of vigorously defending its mission and identity. And yet the smoke coming out of GCC compels us to ask if a fire has been kindled within the Citadel, and just who exactly is manning the walls. In the 1980s, GCC famously stood up to overreach by the federal government, as you mentioned, the Grove City College v. Bell. They have forgone all federal financial support, a move that preserves institutional independence to a much greater degree than its peers. In fact, I think my calculations were only 1% of Christian colleges are foregoing Title IX funds. Only 1%. And Christian colleges make up 1% of American colleges. Well, turns out the 1% of the 1%
has caved.
Isn't doing very well.
Yep.
They're caving now. So what do you do now when the righteous man perishes? What in the world are we going to do now? Well, apparently, Grove City College has given way to the pseudo-religious character of wokeism and the cultural Marxism of CRT. And on November 10th, 2021, concerned GCC parents and alumni initiated a Save GCC from CRT petition. 6 days later, the petition closed after receiving 481 signatures from parents, alumni, former faculty, etc. The specific allegations of the petition can be roughly distilled to the following, that a couple of recent chapel speakers, including crucially GCC's chaplain, Dr. Donald Optiz, had promulgated CRT from the chapel pulpit in a setting in a venue that bears GCC's imprimatur. GCC students are required to attend a certain number of chapel events every semester. GCC's training for resident assistants included a segment by Justin Jose, a member of GCC's newly established Diversity Council and the director of the Office of Multicultural Education Initiatives, in which Mr. Jose instructed RAs to concepts of interracism, white privilege, and white guilt.
Now, he also was observed wearing an LGBT rainbow mask.
Mm-hmm.
Now, McNulty's response to the petition states that, quote, the face mask in question is not a rainbow flag, end quote.
Well, it's a rainbow mask.
Yeah, it's a rainbow mask. Yeah.
And apparently there's an education class requiring students to read How to Be an Anti-Racist. The GCC's Diversity Council sponsored a number of reading groups advertised across campus that favorably featured books pushing elements of CRT. Education Department requested applicants to provide preferred pronouns. GCC has since responded this incident is undergoing review. And the GCC's Academic Resource Center also requested applicants to provide preferred pronouns as well. So that's Grove City College. And you know, they're getting on board the political correctness of transgenderism and preferred pronouns and critical race theory and all the rest. And apparently the president of the university provided something of a limp response to the petition on Friday, November 19th, so that's recently. And there's been a little bit of, you know, interaction with that on this article. McNulty accuses the petitioners of perpetuating cancel culture. The comparison is inapt, says Abatoy. When conservatives lament cancel culture, they typically have in mind the cancellation of a person's bank account, payment processing platform, server space, insurance policies, ability to fly, etc., or perhaps even a person's livelihood in cases where the cancelable speech is unrelated to the person's job performance. It is another thing altogether to say that parents who entrust their children and pay a private school tuition premium in the hopes that they will experience a distinctively Christian conservative education and character formation are engaged in cancel culture when they express concerns about the content of that education. So, point well taken.
Yes.
McNulty also comes back and suggests that he either lacks a robust understanding of how both curriculum and co-curriculum communicate institutional values, or he assumes that the petitioners will not make basic distinctions between education and indoctrination. What parents expect and what GCC markets to potential students and parents is that when students attend GCC, they will robustly engage in the marketplace of ideas in the classroom armed with analytical tools from the Christian tradition, and then outside the classroom, GCC will provide full-orbed and distinctively Christian character formation. In other words, there's a difference between critically reading CRT as part of intellectual training in the classroom and hearing CRT from the chapel's pulpit or student life staff.
Right.
So, in other words, they have woven the CRT principles into the devotional or the spiritual training of the students at
the theological training. Theological training.
Right, exactly. He says, to take another example, McNulty concludes that CRT was not promulgated in chapel because apparently the phrase CRT was not expressly mentioned by any of the speakers. This is like saying that the Communist Manifesto didn't promulgate Marxism because it didn't mention the word Marxism. This reductionist assertion can be refuted by a short walk through Jamar Tisby's GCC Chapel speech on October 20, 2020, in which he preached from the book of Esther about the urgency of now, applying the urgency of Mordecai's plea to Esther to the protest for social justice from the summer of 2020. Tisby argued, speaking of the protest, in case you weren't sure, this is the civil rights movement in our time. It's happening right now. How you respond in moments like this is exactly how you'd have responded in the 1950s and 1960s. And again, we are living in the modern day civil rights movement. Freedom, justice, democracy, especially for black people and the other people of color, are in imminent danger, just as the Jews faced danger. So that was the presentation at the GCC chapel speech. And
Abatoy goes on to say that this, quote, this style of argument is, of course, classic CRT. And so this is the squishy response that you expect from an institution that is toying with or going south, actually going south. And that's what's happening here. And that is concerning. And that's why this petition was initiated and presented to the president.
Yeah. So that's the point made by Avitoy in this article. We want to analyze some of this. Where are we going with this? Why is all of this so influential upon the conservative Christian university of our day? I want to answer that question next on Generation. Stay with us.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you as we consider what's going on with Grove City College, which is one of the most important conservative citadels left in America today, something like 2,400 students, so really not a very large university in comparison with the hundreds, if not thousands, of universities across America with over 10,000 students. But the situation at Grove City College is serious because, well, there isn't much clarity in terms of the definition of these terms. And do these colleges come at these ethical questions with the assumption that all is neutral? To pretend that we do not have a basic worldview by which we examine everything, and then criticize Christians for having a basic worldview by which they examine everything, it's just wrong. It's disingenuous. And Bill, this is what's happening, is they assume that these questions are neutral issues that can be discussed absent of a basic worldview perspective concerning ethics, epistemology, metaphysics, etc. But to pretend that we don't have a basic worldview by which we examine everything, and so we come at it neutrally, that somehow the university is there to examine these things neutrally, and that they don't have a basic worldview by which they're examining critical race theory, etc., etc., and then criticizing Christians for having a basic worldview by which they examine critical race theory and everything else, it's just wrong. It's disingenuous, because they do have a basic worldview by which they are assuming certain standards by which to evaluate what is right and wrong.
Yeah.
And they're pretending that they don't have a preconceived worldview by which to make these examinations and by which to interpret things like critical race theory, while at the same time, they do have a worldview. They are assuming certain things.
Another way of saying it is that everybody has a bias.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
And the question is, which bias is the best bias to be biased by?
Right.
And they are not answering that question.
Well, they're pretending that they don't have a bias.
Right.
While they say we do have a bias. And by the way, we are quite honest about it. Well, yes, we do have a bias. We have a basic worldview construct by which we interpret reality, and we make ethical calls concerning things like critical race theory and social justice.
Yeah,
but they want to pretend they don't have a worldview,
right,
while condemning us for applying our worldview. But they do have a worldview by which they are examining these things.
Yeah, the answer to the question, which bias is the best bias to be biased by, it is the bias of God's word.
Yeah, we need to filter
everything mm-hmm. through his word
sure.
and not pretend that there is a neutral ground, that there's neutrality, that we can just observe neutrally. Nobody is neutral. Everybody has a bias.
And I think that's the epistemological problem here, is that the college pretends that, you know, we can have this discussion without committing ourselves to a basic biblical worldview or a basic worldview perspective by which to examine things like CRT. But at the same time, those that are telling us we can't apply a biblical worldview to analyze things like CRT, they apply their own secular Marxist worldview and take their presuppositions concerning ethics, etc., for granted. Well, the perception of marginalization or stratification in a society is a very subjective thing when you talk about things like critical race theory. The assumption that all inequality is wrong or is sinful is wrong. It's very Marxist. The Bible acknowledges that there is the poor and the rich in a society. The definition of equal opportunity is also very slippery and do not submit themselves to God's law as the basis of morality, and herein lies the problem. The typical demonic strategy is to confuse, to obfuscate, and thereby to create more racial disunity, class envy, anger, and confusion. And that's what's going on. And these guys are allowing these systems into the colleges to confuse the minds of the students and to create, really, and to encourage more racial disunity, more class envy, and confusion. So what they're doing is they're turning the enemy into something anomalous, and usually something that they can just label, but something that doesn't hold any substance, certainly, as defined by the laws of God. See, we don't discuss bad ideas or sinful actions or sinful people on the basis of God's law. When we just say the system is bad and we need continual revolution to change everything. That's what they're doing with critical race theory and the social justice movements. They're basically saying the system's bad, we need continual revolution to change everything, but we're not going to use the law of God to determine what is good and evil, what is right and wrong. According to critical race theory, the sin is white people having more privilege and power and money than people of color. The assumption is that the hatred of people of color is endemic in the system created by people of a certain color. The free market was developed by people of a certain color, so it must be hateful. The public schools were developed by people of a certain color, so they must be hateful and they must be revolutionized. The U.S. Constitution was developed by people of a certain color, so it must be hateful. The Bible is translated in English by people of a certain color, so it must be hateful. So these are the assumptions that are embedded into critical race theory, and you can see how the results are going to be revolutionary and inevitably disunifying for an entire society. And for a lot of reasons. One is it's obfuscating, it's confusing. And it ignores God's law as the standard of what is right and wrong in an economy, in a political system, and in a social unit. Now, here's another problem I want to throw into this. Bill, I think that these Christian colleges haven't really embraced God's word. They haven't embraced God's law as the standard for ethics. They've embraced natural law. And natural law is more malleable than God's revealed law. There are points at which natural law becomes a lot less natural as we go. As we see humanist incursions into society, natural law becomes a lot less natural.
Well, it has been co-opted and redefined. Because natural law, for those who promoted that idea, recognized it was God's law, that it was providential. And what we've done now is we have redefined what is natural, and so therefore we can redefine what is natural law.
And I don't believe that we can interpret natural revelation well enough without a concomitant revealed revelation from God. In fact, even before the fall, Adam had access to God's revealed word.
Right.
In the early covenant of works, immediately, hello, I'm God, you're man, I made you, don't eat of that tree. Okay, natural revelation revealed special revelation occurs immediately, even prior to the fall, and all of the noetic effects that come by the fall. So after the fall, of course, we're absolutely going to need God's special revelation in order to properly understand natural revelation, because the human mind has been so perverted and corrupted by the effects of the fall. So fundamentally, these Christian colleges seem to think they can get by a natural law instead of applying God's revealed law. And I think that is a Achilles heel to the Christian university. To take up controversial matters like critical race theory, racism, social justice, etc., and assume them to be well-defined, universally accepted, and then incorporate them into the university classes and the chapel exercises is to buy into this agenda uncritically from the get-go. And that's what's happening. I don't think they're being critical in their analysis of critical race theory. In fact, we just did a short critical analysis of critical race theory. And I don't think that's happening. I think they're just mindlessly receiving these things and then teaching them and working them into the chapel exercises at this college.
It is indoctrination, not education, to not critically examine something, but to teach it and say, this is, I'm just presenting this as information to you.
Well, it's extraordinary that critical race theory and social justice have made significant inroads into the most conservative colleges in America, including Grove City College, friends, a tiny college of only 2,400 students. As I said, 1% of American Christian colleges were holding the line on things like Title IX funding. There's only 1% of Christian colleges, which is about 0.01% of all college students in America. So right now our position is about 1 in 1,000 when it comes to those university students that have access to a Christian college that brings out something of a basic Christian world and life view instead of turning everybody over to a secular humanism. The power of the zeitgeist is sweeping up the whole college thing in its path. It's extraordinary. The paralyzing fear of offending the snowflakes, the race baiters, the social justice warriors, the BLM crowd is astounding. The surrender to irrationality at the university level is mind-boggling. I think Patrick Henry College is still okay. Is that what you heard?
Yep, and the college in Ohio, oh, can't think of the name. What's the name?
We got about 40 students.
No. It's a major college.
Okay.
Shoot a monkey. I can't think of it.
Okay, that's all right.
I'll think of it.
There's about 6 of them out there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, friends, let me close with this. I'm wondering if it's time to jettison college. Now, we've talked about this before. It's time to get out of the box when it comes to higher education. And I want to put a plug in for mentorship one more time. It turns out that increasingly companies are not turning towards college as much as they used to. In fact, many companies are not requiring 4-year degrees anymore for professional jobs. Do you know that?
Yep.
Costco administration, Hilton, Apple, IBM, Bank of America, Tesla, Google. These are the companies that offer apprenticeship programs as a replacement for college. We've already talked about this. Colleges have lost, what, 4 million students in the last 15 years? Well, mentorship is the way to go. Apprenticeships are the way to go. And I think the industry is figuring this thing out pretty quickly. Mentorship also has proven to work in Switzerland. Do you know that? Here's a story from Switzerland. In an age where most other Western countries are courting a youth unemployment rate of 10 to 30%, Switzerland is about 2%. Listen to this. Youth unemployment in Spain is 31%. Italy is 30%. Sweden is 25%. Greece is 25%. Australia is 14%. UK is 12%. New Zealand is 10%. US is 10%. And Switzerland is 2%. Youth unemployment in Switzerland is by far the lowest in the world.
Wow.
There's almost no country that comes as close to Switzerland. Switzerland is at 2%. Why? High school or secondary education in Switzerland is focused on career and technical education. Commonly, students will spend only 1 or 2 days in school during the high school years, and the rest of the time, they apply what they learn in school every week in the workplace. And while only 25% of Swiss high school graduates take the college route, 70% opt for apprenticeship and early entry into the economy. Friends, that's mentorship, and it's working in Switzerland. Just about every other economy is belly up right now, especially when it comes to youth unemployment. But not so for Switzerland. If a young man decides to pursue a calling in law, here's what it looks like. He has to complete 6 or 7 years of higher education, but from the beginning of his college work, it would be ideal if he would apprentice with the best Christian attorney in the state. He would study his law books in the morning and then work in the law office in the afternoons for 7 years. He'd be far ahead of the pack at the end of it. During the first year, he'd be emptying wastebaskets in the law office. With the second year, he'd help with the research, provide legal pleadings, motions, stipulations. He would assist in the writing and editing of reports, opinions, legal correspondence, complex contracts. By the third year, he'd be sitting next to the attorney every time he's in court. Over the years, he would come to see the relevance of what he studies in the classroom to its application in real life. Hopefully that attorney mentor will over time show him how to apply a biblical integrity in the business of law. A mentor is interested in the character of the apprentice because he knows that character is the key to success. The mentor is there to hone the character of the apprentice. As that young man graduates from law school and passes the bar, the aircraft of his life will be off the runway traveling 500 miles an hour towards achieving his life's calling. But what about the law graduate who's received no mentorship, hardly knows how to apply anything he's learned to real court cases and real courtrooms? The graduate who thinks he knows something but has never learned the legal profession. On graduation, this fellow's aircraft still wandering around the tarmac trying to find the runway. The kind of education knowledge a young man receives could very well cripple his implementation of that knowledge for a lifetime, especially if it lacks the life integrative element and if he's trying to pay off $250,000 in college debts. And I'll just add that to my little segment here.
Yeah, well, friends,
that's mentorship, and we talk about it all the time. We've got a Life Launch program as part of our Generations.org offerings. Would encourage you to that Kickstart program. It's part of our 11th grade core curriculum, and I'd point you to it right now. Go get Kickstart, and get out of the box now on this whole college education concept. At the very least, add apprenticeships to the mix. That's all I'm saying. You notice I didn't say jettison college entirely. You're going to need some college for law. You're going to need some college for to be a medical doc. Not so much for an engineer anymore. Not so much for a computer scientist, especially if you work at IBM or Apple or some of these other organizations. In fact, most of the young men I know that are making six figure, say at 24, 25 years of age, most of them have not gone to college.
Yeah.
So college is so yesterday, especially for most of the technical degrees. And, of course, the business degrees and all the rest. Okay, mentorship and apprenticeship is where it's at. Get your copy of Kickstart right now at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.